Good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next couple of hours, you're stuck with me and my wife who's sitting here next to me. Good morning, sunshine.
Good morning. How are you?
We've been up early.
Yes, we were.
I fed the horses.
You were.
Yeah, I fed the horses in my underwear, but there was no one out to see me.
That's good.
I'm not quite sure that's an important piece of information, but
I don't think so either.
I just didn't. Well, you know, the burrow was braying.
I heard her.
I was scared that the neighbors would start throwing apples at us or something. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. It's a car show. So you call in and tell us your year, make, and model, and then we talk about the symptoms. So you say it doesn't start, and then I get to ask questions like, does that mean that when you hit the key, nothing happens? Or does that mean when you hit the key, the starter cranks over the engine, but it doesn't catch or start? So those are the kinds of questions. Another example is, you know, I have a bad vibration. Is it in the dashboard or the steering wheel, or is it in the seat of your pants? So that's how we work it. It's not really important to tell me what all the parts you've changed, because I'm thinking to myself, well, we know it's not those parts. Unless, of course, you got a bad one. And you'd know that after you replaced three starters and you got a good one, then you'd know the other four before that, or the other two before that, didn't work either. It gets kind of busy the second hour, and there's oftentimes from 10 after the hour, so 10 after 11, we're just swamped with callers. So this first hour is an easy way to get in if you have a question or a comment about a car repair. If you're going to say something nice about a shop, it's okay. If you're going to say something bad about the shop, then skip the name and the address. Just kind of tell us about your experience with respect to the shops. 602-508-0960. It's not important. Well, it is important to me that you understand that I know that there's some real bad independent shops. I know I'm of the opinion that there's one and maybe two bad chain stores in town. I'm also aware of dealerships that seem to be very aggressive for reasons that I don't understand. So, and I'm in the independent market. I'm not in the chain or the dealership. But there's bad guys all the way around, and it's up to you to figure out how they are. And so I'll have advice for you on how to figure out whether you're being treated fairly or not. My wife and I were coming back from Payson not too long ago, and she says, you just rolled over to 100, right?
On my car?
Yeah.
No, I'm about 90.
Okay. So if I remember correctly, you said, I think I want to have the spark plugs changed.
I did.
And why?
Because it didn't have as much get up and go as I usually have.
Oh, you're admitting to be a little heavy on the throttle?
Every once in a while I need to be.
Well, from here to our house in Tempe, you oftentimes beat my times by 10 minutes or more.
I don't know why, because
it's
speed
a stopwatch.
Way more than I do.
It's a stopwatch. I get it. So, anyway, I said, let's look up in the owner's manual.
Right.
Because sometimes spark plugs are 80, sometimes they're 100, sometimes they're even north of 100. So
right.
What are yours?
100.
100.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to have them changed, and we're not going to go with anything other than a comparable spark plug of the same we take out. So if we take out a Motorcraft,
mm-hmm.
we might cross that to an NGK, or we might cross it to a Champion, or we might cross it to a variety of other spark plugs.
Mm-hmm.
The other day when I pulled spark plugs out of our mini truck up here at the ranch, I had to cross those
right. Because
they were of a brand I've never heard of before. But Jeff in our parts department, as you know, he's a wizard. And
yeah.
So he crossed them into a Champion, and then I was able to find him here locally.
Yeah, because they were probably the original spark plugs in that thing, right?
I'm thinking so.
Yeah.
And the way it runs now is so much better than the way it used to run.
Right.
And I never thought it had a miss until the very end. At the very end, there was no question. Da-da-da-da-da-da. It had a miss.
Mm-hmm.
So I sprayed some water on the spark plug wires, thinking I'll see a spark if I got a plug wire that's grounded, and nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
So then I would shut the engine off. I'd pull a spark plug. I'd pull a wire, and I would see what the miss sounded like.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I pulled one, it doubled up. I pulled two, and it didn't change. And I pulled three and it doubled up.
Okay.
So instead of having just one miss, da, 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 there was da, 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 da. And so I could see that I knew I needed to deal with number two.
Mm-hmm.
So, and by the way, it's a little, what is it? A
Mitsubishi.
Yeah. Truck. It's right-hand drive. And it has a 650cc motorcycle motor that runs it.
It's like a meter-made car.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It is. It's four-wheel drive, though. And we use it around here to haul branches to the dumpster, and we use it to haul feed, and we use it to haul a lot of stuff. I mean, it's a five-speed.
Mm-hmm.
It's a clutch.
And it's a right-hand drive?
Right-hand drive, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's right.
I always get in the wrong side to drive it.
Everybody does. Everybody. So you want to drive it? Yeah, and they get into the passenger side, and they're looking for the stupid steering wheel.
Yeah.
Okay, real quick, I'm going to tell them a story. I already know that.
Okay.
Okay.
You tell them a story.
I'm going to tell them a story. When we bought this,
uh-huh.
You were following me home.
Yes.
And I'd pull up to an intersection, and I'd flip on the turn signal. And the windshield wipers would start flapping.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about.
And so I kicked this switch up to the neutral position, and I'm thinking, oh, somebody crossed some wires or whatever. So every time I turned left and right, I tried the turn signals left, I tried the turn signals right, and the wipers would flap.
Mm-hmm.
That went on for weeks.
It still goes on.
No, to someone who doesn't. But the turn signals are on the right side of the steering wheel.
Yeah.
And not the left side. The left side is actually the wipers.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it took the car guy a couple of weeks to figure that out. I kept saying, oh, I'm going to find out where they've crossed the, maybe there's a jumper on the fuse to feed that circuit. I'm thinking of all these different ways.
Yeah.
And so I felt like a fool, but I'm going to admit that I was wrong.
Yeah, and you still get in there and do the same thing.
I do.
So, yeah.
I do. I turned on the air conditioning the other day.
Yeah.
There's a substantial reduction in power when you turn the air conditioning on a three-cylinder motorcycle.
You might tell them, too, that you and I can barely go up the hill to get into Payson
that's
where
true.
We live.
Not now, though.
Yeah,
not
it's
now.
Better,
oh, it's a bunch better now.
Yeah.
But that means you
it
don't have to.
It was probably the spark plugs.
It was. And you don't have to get out and push anymore.
That's right.
So, all righty. We got a caller. Who would that be, Gil?
That would be Henry.
Henry, good morning to you.
Good morning, sir. Regarding your little situation with that truck and having the wrong signals, I own a driving school, and 99% of my students are from India. So guess what they like to push instead of the turn signal in the car?
The
wipers.
The wipers, yeah.
So what I've done was I use a Mustang V6 that does not have a switch there for the wipers. It's on the end of the turn signal. So it's funny to watch their hands flip around on the right side of the wheel looking for the signal that they think is there, which isn't. But it forces them to understand that it's on the left side, and so the next car they get in, they'll automatically be conditioned to know it's on that side.
Well, for me, I get into my truck after I've driven that for 3 or 4 days hauling hay and stuff, and I get into my truck, and I'm kind of fumbling to the right side, which is the shifter, and I'm trying to turn on the turn signals there. But in my defense, I got a whole lot of things on my mind. Number one, my wife speeding back down to Phoenix, getting a ticket or something like that. So let me ask you a question, Henry. It's the million-dollar question, and don't you wuss out on me on this. Who's better drivers, men or women?
Neither. It all depends.
You can't have it that way, Henry.
Yes, I can, because I've done this for 11 years. I've had over 5,000 clients, men, women, teenagers. You all suck when you get confused. That's all there is to it. You all suck.
Okay.
I don't want to take up too much of your time. We'll get back to that. I got to tell you, I asked you about a BMW Mini Cooper months ago, supercharged. I was doing a trade for a motorcycle.
Uh-huh.
So I went ahead with the trade, and I love this car. I've already made about $1,000 teaching stick shift in it. It's a 6-speed.
Oh,
I love this car. It is so much fun. It is a go-kart with air conditioning and a stereo and a convertible top.
I'm going to tell you a story. This is a true story. I'm riding with another cowboy down to Phoenix, and we're riding in a Camaro that's pretty fast. So we're cruising down the road. I don't know, speed limit 65, and so we're probably at 70. He's driving, and this little S Cooper kind of rips by us and starts winding the road, and we get into a windy road. So he says, well, I think I can stay on their tail. And I said, well, that's a supercharged Mini Cooper. And he goes, this is a V8, Mark. So he stays within sight of the Mini Cooper. But when we start up the Mount Ord place, he turns on his left turn signal, and he passes the Mini Cooper quite rapidly. So we get up to the top, and we're on our way down the other side, reset the cruise control, the speed limiter, a few more. And this Mini Cooper pulls up next to the driver's side, and the window's down, and there's a lady my age that gives us a thumb up. and I am just amazed that this lady's driving the Mini Cooper in that fashion. And we estimate that she was probably doing 90 miles an hour down the backside of it. And we know that the cops sit down at the bottom side, so we didn't. But it was really an interesting happening. I expected a young man. I did not expect a lady in her 50s or 60s to give us the thumbs up.
It was actually me. I was doing my cross-dressing routine.
Oh, okay.
I didn't want to say anything. I didn't want to out myself. But my third point goes to a car that I bought recently, a 2000 Jaguar S-Type. It's got 91,000 on it. Tell me about the cooling fan, the big fat one. Is it turnable by hand, or is it as stiff as it is, or does it spin freely?
Well, is the fan, is it an electric fan, or is it a belt-driven fan?
Electric. And okay. It's not overheating. I let it sit for hours, and...
Do you hear the fan come on and go off?
Weather. No, I haven't. I've left the top open and let it sit in my driveway and running, and I've come out and in and out on different occasions. I never stood out there the whole time, but it never goes past halfway on the mark.
Well, first of all, if it's an electric fan with the motor off, you should be able to key in your pocket. You should be able to spin the blades. I mean, you should be able to do it. I want you to do this. I want you to start it up and let it warm up, and I want you to turn the air conditioning on and see if the fan comes on. Okay.
Yeah, I've done that, and I haven't seen the fan come on.
Okay. I'm uncomfortable with you sitting in the middle. I'd much rather you be between the half and the three-quarter mark. So I wonder if the thermostat stuck open or somebody removed the thermostat. Is that a – what, do you have an XR?
XJR.
XJR?
No, this is just the four-liter V8.
Okay. Well, yeah, we had one of those, but yours was a supercharged.
XG.
This isn't.
Okay, yeah. I understand. Well, I think that there needs to be some work there. You know something else you can do? This sounds really stupid, but you know, remember when we used to put play-in cards in the spokes or with
yep.
close, you know, stick one up front there, and you'll hear the fan come on. And as long as the radio's not too loud, you'll hear the fan come on. But I'm a little uncomfortable with a electric fan that you can't spin with your fingers. But I'm also wondering why we're not climbing up towards the three-quarter mark and playing on either side of the three-quarter mark if that fan's not working. So I don't know the answer
exactly.
to your question. All righty, good luck to you, Henry. Thank you very much. I still don't believe him. His wife is standing there next to him, so when I ask him who's better drivers, he said both men and women are equally as bad.
Uh-huh.
But I'm telling you, his wife was standing there next to him, and he was probably scared to death of her.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, she probably drives better than him, and he didn't want us to know that.
Well, I know I drive better than you, I don't know.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Hey, Gil, do we have anybody in queue? Okay, Dixie is next, and she might have the answer to the question, who's better driving, men or women? We'll be back just right after this. Twenty minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, my name's Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is my wife, Renee Salem, and we're here at your service. Both of them have been in the car business for 39 years. I've been under the hood. She's kind of been in the bookkeeping, the money section, all the places that I have no business being in. But there is a shop in town, Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom owns Action Auto Repair. He's been around since 1983, and I've known him since 1983. He's on my best car repair shops list, and very few people make it because the hurdles are quite large. But Tom's a good guy. It didn't take me long to decide that he would be. He's on Deer Valley and I-17, the northwest corner. He has ASC Master Certified Technicians, and he's a good guy. Dixie, good morning to you.
Good morning.
How can we help you?
We have a 2018 Chevy Tahoe XL. And in the morning when I go to work, I go down my, you know, our street, mm-hmm. and then I turn left into the thoroughfare, and when I do, I press on the accelerator, and nothing happens, and then there's this huge jolt forward. Sometimes it happens on the freeway, going onto the freeway. It happens whether my husband or I are driving. We've taken it to the dealership two times. My husband drove with a technician the second time, and there's, you know, their report is that nothing's wrong with the car, but we keep encountering this problem.
Okay.
And
was your husband able to duplicate the problem with the driver, with the guy in it?
I don't think he drove. I think the technician drove.
Okay, and so the technician actually was able to verify that there's this hesitation when you throttle up on an entrance ramp to the freeway?
No. He said there was nothing wrong with the car.
Okay, okay. All right.
He didn't encounter the problem.
All right. In my situation, where's that coming from?
Hold on.
In my situation, it's an issue that has to do with this. I would swap technicians, but sometimes facility doesn't have the ability to swap technicians. But I want you to try something. I want you to manually shift this. So when you stop before you get on the entrance ramp, I want you to pull the shifter down into L low. And then as you accelerate up, I want you to click at the shifter up one. Or if there's probably an up and down button on your shift handle. Is that right?
I'm sitting in my car right now.
Okay, in the Tahoe?
There's a trailer with an arrow.
Okay.
There's also a plus and a minus.
Yes. Yeah, the plus and the minus.
Okay.
Okay, so you're going to push the bottom of that thing at the traffic light, and it look down at your where it says what gear you're in. It'll say first, and then you're going to go in, and you're going to push the top one to go into second, go into third, so forth. Okay. Otherwise, you're manually shifting the transmission. The question is this a problem with the transmission where there's a delay in engagement, but you're going to override that by manually shifting the transmission. So the question now becomes, hey, Dixie, when you manually shift the transmission, is the problem there? Dixie's going to say, yes, okay, we need to go in a different direction, or no, it's gone. Well, then you go back to the dealer and you explain to them exactly how you make it stop. And hopefully they'll have have a clue on that. Okay?
Because sometimes when I come to a stop to turn into our street, there's a jolt that comes forward also. Just in slowing down and stopping.
Okay. Can you feel the jolt in the seat of your pants? Does it go all over the car?
Yeah, I mean, I can feel the shift underneath the car.
Okay. All right. Then, if I were you, too, go test drive another one at maybe the same dealership and just take it for a ride.
You mean another Tahoe?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just find one in the Auto Trader or find one on a dealer's lot. It's an 18. So I would, and this is something it wasn't born with. This is something that just recently happened.
Right. We've had it for a full year, taken it back to the two farms, you know, no problems whatsoever, and it just developed this year.
Okay. You have two choices, to insist that you learn how to make it happen, and insist somebody comes with you, and you show them how to do it, and then you sit in the passenger seat. Or you go in a couple more times so we have a receipt showing you've got this hesitation on takeoff. That way when your warranty lapses, and then someday down the road they say, oh, you need a whole new transmission. Well, what's the problem? Well, first gear's out of it. Well, here's four documents that you had a chance to figure this out. By having those documents, then they can't say, oh, it's not covered under warranty because the problem was there during warranty. Does that make sense?
I see.
And I had that happen to me on a Suburban transmission, and well after it was out of warranty, I went in and they said, yep, the transmission's wiped out, and we looked at your history, and yes, you had exactly the right symptoms. We didn't catch it, so we're putting it in for you for free. So that was kind of nice. And I didn't stand up and thump my chest and say I was Mark Salem and all that kind of stuff. It was Brown and Brown Chevrolet when they were in Mesa.
Mm-hmm.
And they treated everybody the same as they treated Mark Salem, but they're not anymore there. But Henry Brown's down on the 202. But anyway, Dixie, good luck to you. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Steve, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark, how's it going?
I'm good.
You and I and Alan have, I think we all three have the same truck. I have a 2012 Dodge Ram 3500, crew cab, long bed, four-wheel drive.
Yep, he has a four-wheeler. His is a 250, I think, and mine's a 350 dually.
Yeah, I think his is a 2008 or 9.
It is, too.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit older.
Yeah. So what's up, Steve?
What I have is I was going to Mississippi to pick up a new car hauling trailer with my buddy, and I have the stock Michelins that came on that truck, and it's the second set of tires that have been on this dually. And I am traveling with the just the truck. I have the air pressure about 5 pounds PSI under max, since I'm not under load. And the tires have approximately 26,000 miles on them, and they've been rotated at least three, but could be rotated four times.
Okay, hold on. I need to ask them questions first. Tell me about the wear on the tires.
You know, there's hardly any wear on the tires. With the rotation I do, and no feathering, the only thing other than stock that I have in the truck is I have, I think they're inch and a half front spacers in the front.
To level the nose on it. But Steve, you said that it's going through tires abnormally. You said that you're on your second set.
Yeah, this is the second set in the truck, and I'm sorry, the truck has 103,000 miles on it.
Well, what are you complaining about?
That wasn't
a question. No. All I'm saying is the truck right now, this set of tires has about 26,000 miles on it, and on the way to Mississippi, I had a tread separation blowout on these Michelins.
Okay.
And of course, now right now with 26,000 miles and one brand new Michelin on the right front and the others have 26,000 miles, I've lost confidence in these tires when I'm towing my fifth wheel or I'm towing my 10,000 pound boat. Okay. And I'm at the point where, I don't feel safe. The tires are, you know, relatively, they're like 2.5 years old.
Okay, I'm up against a break. I'm only 30 seconds away from a break. We're going to put you on hold. But now I understand the question, I think. Mm-hmm. I think the problem is he had one tread separation. These tires are 26,000 miles old. I haven't changed mine yet, and they're 88,000 miles. So I'm real happy with that. Mm-hmm. But I drive a lot of straight ahead. Mm-hmm. But like him, I'm rotating the tires. But it's a confidence issue. So in a nutshell, I had a tread separation on some 26,000-mile Michelins, and I'm not quite sure what to do, or I've lost confidence. So I'll answer that on the backside. 602-508-0960. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, Mark Salem and Renee sitting here next to me, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Automotive Dynamics has been around in Sun City since 1982. Chuck started it, and Derek, his son, has taken over. They're a really good auto repair shop. They do oil changes all the way up to engines and everything in between. They don't do many engines because they don't see many engines, but they do see cars from the older community that goes only 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000 miles a year. So they work with both those as well as people that pack on 20,000 miles a year or 30. So if you're in the Sun City area and you don't have a shop that you trust, or you want to try somebody new to compare your shop to, then Auto Dynamics are on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Steve, there's two issues that I can comment on briefly. Number one, is that new tire going to affect the wear, or is it going to affect the gear, the front wheel drive, the rear wheel drive? And the answer is no. The second question is that you said you were 5 under the maximum. As long as you're between, on a cold tire, you're between what the door sticker says and the maximum on the tire, you're fine. If you go to the maximum on the tire and you put the Queen Mary behind your truck, it's going to cause the tire to heat up more, but the tire is designed for that. So if it's 85 on the top end, if it goes to 95, the tire's designed for that. That's why they say cold temperatures. As far as Michelin is concerned, we see tread separations on a regular basis. There's no rhyme or reason. So you only have two choices. Choice number one is you live with what you got and say to yourself, when was the last time I had a tread separation? Number two, you go buy brand new tires all the way around if it's a comfort zone issue. But the tread separation just means the tire had a defect and it manifested itself at 26,000 miles. Have you had a tread separation on any of your cars?
I think I had one on one tire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or I think it was actually on this car that I have now, and it was a tread separation. I could feel the wobble and the bump before it blew up or anything.
Sounds like there's a big feeling of tar on the tread, so the tire's no longer circle. It's got this big blister on it, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And a tread separation, for the rest of you folks, is typically the between the inner liner, which is the inner part of the tire, and the tread on the outer part of the tire. We separate that, so the tread comes apart from the casing, and it's all supposed to be glued together. But although I don't believe that Michelin is the king of all tires, I do believe it's a quality tire. And there's people that come in that want Michelins. Mm-hmm. And there's other people that come in and say, what do you have on your truck?
Right.
So those are the two options. But hauling what he is, he's not hauling any more or less weight than I'm hauling.
Uh-huh.
And I run mine at maximum inflation all the time.
Right.
So he can do a circumference check on his tires, and I bet that the difference between that new tire and all the rest of them might be a quarter of an inch in circumference. So I really wouldn't worry about it. Let's go to Steve. Steve, good morning. Oh, you know what? That was Steve.
That was Steve.
Yeah, that was Steve. Fred, we're going to go to Fred next. There How you are go. You?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I have a 2016 Nissan Murano. The other day I was going down the road and it kind of started sputtering, not going anywhere, couldn't get it above 2,000 RPM. I stopped, waited a minute, started it back up again, and it's been great. I took it into my shop and they said it probably went into limp mode and they could not find any kind of code problem with it.
Okay.
What can you tell me about limp mode?
2 minutes.
Well, limp mode is the car sees something wrong, and it takes over and provides a number that otherwise is not there. So limp mode is, I'm going to get you home, but we're not going to use all the functions that you would normally have. So if the exhaust were plugged, then it says, okay, I'm going to go into limp mode. If you lose a wheel sensor, it might go into limp mode. But basically, it's just a plan A is completely normal. Plan B is okay, I'm going to get you home, or I'm going to get you to the next city, or I'm going to do this or do that. But I'm thinking, I've been wrong before, that you can't go into limp mode without a code.
That's what I was thinking, yeah. I had not heard that.
And if you, because the code's first. The code comes up and says, hey, all of a sudden the motor's going down the road at 3,000 RPM and I don't have any air coming into the engine. So my mass airflow sensor's reading zero. And they don't know that Fred is going 100 miles an hour and has turned the key off. the computer's going, where's all the air inside? Well, the engine's not running. So I don't know that I'd work about it. Let me ask you, how many miles are on your Murano?
47,000.
Okay. That would be a symptom of a fuel pump failure or a fuel pressure problem, but not at 47,000. We don't see those until north of 60 or 70. Obviously, if it happens again, this is what I want you to try. I want you to pull off to the side of the road, and I want you to turn the key off, take the key off, and put it on the dashboard. Sit there for one or two songs on the radio. Then put the key back in, start it up. Be aware of the check engine light. Make sure the bulb's good.
Right.
So, and then if there's a code, that will at least send us in the right direction. Now, keep in mind, just because it says mass airflow sensor code, it's not a mass airflow sensor. And keep in mind, if it says an oxygen sensor, it's not an oxygen sensor. 75% of the time, it's not an oxygen sensor. So let's not get tied up in this. Let's spend money on the code, and then you end up, we had a guy called not too long ago with a $400 mass airflow sensor, and it didn't fix his car. So we're out $400.
Okay.
So I don't know if I would worry about this, but I do know that if you wanted to go to Yuma tomorrow afternoon, I'm not going to go with you.
Okay. That's my primary question. Is this something that's probably going to happen again, and I don't want to take the car on any kind of long trips?
Well, have you had the fuel filter changed on it in a long time?
No. Okay. No, I have not.
I would want to take the fuel filter out, and if I were your garage, I'd take the fuel filter out, and I'd have it. And I'd have the new one in my hand, and I'd have the old one in my hand. And so when I get to the old one, I've done this before many times. I'm still alive. I put my lips over the input side of the fuel filter and blow with all my might. Now, right. If it's like a straw where somebody's pinching the other end, and then I take the new one and I blow through it, and it's like a big straw, there is no resistance at all, then I would say, let's change this. But what you didn't say was, and I listened carefully, you didn't say I was doing 70 miles an hour and it started running really poorly. The demand for fuel will certainly exceed the available supply. So if this would have been at 70 or 80, or if your wife's driving 90 miles an hour and it fell on its face, then I'd say, okay, we need to look at the fuel system. But just drive it after it goes into limp mode. Take a side street and drive circles for 15 minutes to see if you can get the check engine light to come on.
Okay.
All righty.
I can do that because it did not come on. No lights came on at all.
Yeah.
And I was only doing 35 miles an hour.
Okay. Now, when you turn the key on, you got to stop when you turn the key on, and you ought to make sure that that's called a bulb check.
Right.
Okay. Make sure the light comes on, and then when you start it, the light goes off. But this is going to be one of those things that's going to get worse and easier to find. It's just not right now. The good news is if the thing will go down the freeway at 70 miles an hour, then it's probably going to be related to a lower speed problem than a higher speed problem. All righty? All righty. Good luck to you, Fred. Thank you very much for calling. James, you're next, but I got to take a break. So when I come back, James, you're my first caller. We'll be back. Forty-four minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, we have open lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960 for car questions, car problems, or if you and your husband are having an argument and you want me to tell you who's right and who's wrong, give us a call. James, just like I promised, what can I do for you?
Oh, man, finally. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you taking the call. Hey, just real quick, did you say you were taking recommendations on mechanic shops around town, as long as we weren't dogging anybody?
Yeah, but what I want you to do, and thank you for this, by the way. Thank you for this. I want you to send me an email and tell me as much as you can about your relationship with the shop, how long you've been there, and tell me what kind of car you're taking to them. And then a phone number, and I'll call you back. So what happens at that point, if you nominate the shop, then we go in and we look at the Better Business Bureau records. We look at Yelp and Google and all those kinds of places. And frankly, we don't give a whole lot of, because there's a lot of people that are just really mad. And when you look at their story, you say to your, from the car repair, oh boy, you're mad at us because the windshield wiper
screen. Just so you know, I do have a car question, but okay. I do have a shop I want to recommend. So I'll send you that email. Can you give that email out again?
Mark@marksalem.com. Mark with a K at Salem like the cigarette. But go ahead with your car question. That's no problem.
Okay, so don't laugh when I say this.
Okay.
I have a 2015 Chevy Traverse with 197,000 miles.
Wow.
Well, good for you. Good for you. You're getting your money out of that baby.
This is what happens when you drive without mentioning one of the companies. You drive rideshare part-time, you put miles on your car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you like the people that are in your car?
You know what? I would say that 98% of the time, yes. I've never had a problem. I've had over 4,000 rides. I have never had someone throw up.
Okay.
Right. I have never had belligerent, just ridiculous passengers. I have had some crazy stories, but that's a different show.
Well, and that's good. Obviously, do you drive a lot on Friday and Saturday night? Because you said nobody's puked in your car.
That's where the money is. Yeah. The money's on Friday night, Saturday night.
All righty.
I'm going to just put it this way. Drunk people tip, and they over-tip.
Yeah.
I could tell you a story about our daughter being delivered home and the lady pulling her out of the back seat and then turning around to my wife and say, there's
but
a cleanup.
We don't have enough time for that. Go ahead, Mark.
That lady was our hero, though. Yeah. That lady was our hero.
That, again, is a different show.
Yeah. Alrighty, James, I'm ready for your car question. I'm in trouble anyway.
So my check engine light is on, and the shop I want to recommend is actually outstanding. They're the only shop that I know that gives a 3-year, 36,000-mile warranty.
Okay.
And I've had work done there for free. They've actually lost money on me because they've done so much work for me for free. But the check engine light keeps coming on, and the code it keeps sending is small evap leak.
Okay.
They have looked through this son of a gun from front to back, and they cannot find a leak anywhere.
Okay, okay.
But the check engine light keeps getting smelly, but it's not the gas cap. It's not.
I understand. I know. I know. If they haven't fixed it yet, then they've been through all of that.
My biggest thing is the auto start doesn't work if the check engine light is on.
Okay.
So it's more of an inconvenience for me at this point.
All right, let's deal with the issue. Did they ever say that anything about the word smoke?
No.
Okay. This is real easy for us gray-haired guys because we know exactly we have this machine that makes smoke like our dads used to smoke cigars and cigarettes and the thick, white, dense smoke. We slip it into the evap system, lift the car up in the air. Usually there's the smallest technician we have underneath the hood with the car in the air. He's looking for smoke. We're looking for smoke in the back. And then all of a sudden, we see smoke coming out of the top of the tank. We see smoke coming off this broken plastic line and underneath the firewall on the passenger side. All somebody has to do is go in and look at the evap system and then introduce smoke into the entire system. And once you do that, the success rate, I would say, is 85 to 90% of the time an evap leak can be found and repaired. Now, sometimes it takes $100 to find it, and it's going to take $150 to fix it because the canister's bad. But at least 50% of the time we have them, we're going to find a plastic line that's broken. We're going to take a short piece of windshield wiper hose. We're going to slip it over one end and slip it over the other end. So it costs you $85 to find it, $100 to find it, and $1.50 to fix it. That's what you have to look forward. Now, I would say to the shop, let's get a fresh pair of eyes on this. Who's in your neighborhood is really good, that is good as you are, but gives us a fresh pair of eyes. That's a nice way to say it. What part of town do you live in?
I am out in, technically I'm in Florence, Arizona.
Okay. Yeah,
so
I don't...
That might give away who the shop is, because there's only five of them, and they're local. So.
Oh, yeah. No, and I want to tell you something. Florence doesn't make my skin crawl either. I was out there not too long ago on a legal case that I was working for an insurance company, and actually I was very proud of the shop. He had all of his records in order, and the question was, did he miss something? The answer is no, he didn't. I mean, that was my answer after my investigation. So you got a pretty good chance... Yeah, on a Florence shop, because I don't know a bad one. And as a matter of fact, I didn't know they had five, but I don't know a bad one. Okay, James, thank you. Good luck to you, buddy. Tom, you're up next. How can I help you, Tom?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a brake job done last week. Front rotors were replaced, and along with brake pads, and the rear brake pads were replaced along with turning the rotors. And once in a while, maybe 20% of the time when I'm slowing down slow to stop, I hear this swoosh sound like it's almost like a drum brake sound. And then it goes away, of course, when I stop completely. So what do you think that could be?
Well, I think what you need to do what I hear you saying is it's brake related, no question about it, because it doesn't happen until I hit the brakes. So I would try to determine how to make it, and I would also have my wife drive, and I would sit in the passenger front, and then the passenger rear, and then the driver's rear. I'd have my window open. I'd be on a Sunday morning. I'd be behind the Bash's grocery store. I'd be driving, and I'd try to find out myself which corner it's at. But if you can duplicate the problem, and you got it when you did the brakes, then it's really theirs to fix, but you need to help them find it. And that, and I'm just saying, as far as time is concerned, you need to help them find it. But really and truly, I had a customer not so long ago, and he had heard one of the radio shows, and he had this noise. So he drove, and his wife sat in the passenger seat with her feet flat on the floorboard. And then they switched places, and they both agreed that the noise was coming from the right front, because they both had their feet flat on the floor on the driver's side as well. Well, that sure makes it easy for me. Especially, when I drive the car, it's not going to happen for me. And so you're giving me a... And then if you say, I'm coming in a nice slow stop and I hear this noise, this air rush, this rubbing. But if I come in hard, it doesn't do that. Now, what you haven't said anything about is the brake pedal's fading to the floor. That's a good idea. That there's no pulsation in the brake pedal. And that's okay, too. So I listened carefully what you said. And there's no grinding noise. So the absence of those means whatever this is, it's not any big deal. So right. It's entirely possible that the new pads, and here's something else you can do. I want you to go out and I want you to stop this thing as if a ball just ran out in front of you. This is behind the Bash's store Sunday morning, and come on the brakes hard two or three times from 20 to 30 miles an hour. Just come on hard. Then let's see if it's still there, because maybe we just need to burn those pads in. Now, I'm not suggesting you do this all the time. I'm just suggesting this is a diagnostic process.
Right. So won't that set off the anti-lock brakes?
Well, it could. That's okay with me. I mean, I think that if you set off the anti-lock brakes the first time, then just back off the pedal application a little bit. Because anti-lock brakes means one of the tires is starting to lock up or is locked up. I don't want you to hit it that hard.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. All righty. Thompson's Auto Repair is a good shop. He's out in Mesa. And Brian and Thelma, like I've told you before, come from two of the gas station families that was started in Mesa, the Vivian family and the Thompson family. So they married up when Brian and Thelma got married. And they've been around, their families have been around a long time. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley, the south side of the road. All you have to do is meet Brian and Thelma to know that they're the salt of the earth. They're really good people, and they know how to fix cars. But they also, more importantly, they know how to say, I'm not the best shop for this, or I've never fixed this before. So I say that sometimes, too. You bring your car in, and I'll just say, I've never fixed this before. But if it's a BMW, I'm going to send it to a local BMW shop that I like. Not too long ago, they saved my bacon. So Thompson's Auto Repair is the only place in Mesa. They're on Main Street, just east of Stafely, the south side of the road. Okay, who's next, Gil?
That would be Ray.
Ray, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mark. Hey, I just had a story for you about Action Auto Repair.
Oh, is it a good one?
It's a good one.
Okay, I'm ready.
Yeah, and I had been having trouble with my truck. It's a 2006 2500 with the 6.0 motor, but it's got a little over 300,000 miles on it. And every once in a while, I'd go into limp mode, and I'd get a check engine light, but I drive a lot, and so by the time I got someplace where I could get the diagnostics done on it, the engine light was off again. And sometimes it'd go for 2 weeks like this or 3 weeks like this before it'd do it again, and then sometimes it'd do it six or seven times in a day.
Okay, stop for just a minute. I want to ask you a question. Okay. When you said you get the diagnostic done, who was doing the diagnostic?
Well, nobody had, because the light was off before I could get it to a shop.
I know, but you did say that I would take it to a diagnostic place. What I'm asking you is what kind of equipment did they use to look at it, and how do you know there's no code there?
The first place I took it was Action Auto Repair.
Okay. All right.
And they brought out a hand. And get this, I went on a Monday morning at 8:30, just exactly what you say not to do.
Okay, that's okay. That's
sometimes
okay.
You have to.
And, and it was, I finally had the light. It had done it like four or five times. I live in Buckeye, and I was headed to Rio Verde.
Okay.
And so I had the engine light on. It had just done it again about 3 miles before their shop. So I pulled in there. Apologize for coming Monday morning at 8:30, and their tech, his name was Mike, came out and plugged in his device, and he had like three codes in it.
Okay.
And he said, okay, I reset it.
2 minutes.
I want you to go drive it and see if you can throw a code again. In the meantime, I'm going to look these up and see what they say. And so I went and drove it. I probably drove it 10 miles.
Okay, we got 2 minutes till the end of this hour, so go ahead. But I'm
okay. Okay, so I come back. He tells me he ran the code. It's my throttle body. He said, you may be able just to clean your blades and everything. Are you mechanical at all? And I said, yeah, a little bit. So he explained it to me, how to do it. He said, if it's not that, it's your throttle body. So I cleaned them. It didn't work. I went and got a throttle body. Worked perfect.
Okay, what kind of car is this?
It's a 2006 Chevy 2500 HD.
Okay. All right. You know, us senior guys kind of know that, and the real proof of the pudding is you got a throttle body and it fixed it. But if you did, right. if you got a throttle body and it didn't fix it,
1 minute.
There's a risk associated with that. The shop tells you it's if this doesn't work, then and they're counting on you doing a good job cleaning up the throttle blades. But that's a good thing.
Right.
He's a seasoned guy. He knew that it was going to be one or the other, or he probably had a third choice, but it was like 12% of the time he sees this dog. So the whole
yeah.
big picture is a good thing. I would have liked to have known a little bit more about the throttle body, but clearly he was seeing something on his scanner. And by the way, you talk about codes not there. There's historical data in most cars. So we got to go past the code and look at the historical data. And the kid,
right.
with the, and the reason I was asking you where he had it done is because the kid, the three-whiskered kid at the auto parts store, only reads the codes. He doesn't have a prayer in hell of looking at behind the scene and look at historical data. So I'm going to call Tom and I'm going to lie to him and tell him that you complained, but then I'm going to tell him the truth. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Four minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Thank you for hanging on with us. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We got two callers. That means we have three lines available if you want to jump on now. It's going to get busy. And today, we're going to go for a record. Our record is 18 callers in one show for 2 hours. And we've already got nine. So we should be able to hit that. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Greenway. North of Greenway on 40th Street on the west side of the road. Him and I have been buddies for a very long time. He's a very principled guy, and he's a really good technician himself. So he knows that, well, the technicians know they're not going to walk into his office and feed him a line of malarkey. So Tom's a good guy, especially if you have an old hot rod, but he does oil changes on newer model cars and does all other kind of stuff. So Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Greenway. Mark to Mark, how can I help you?
Well, good morning, Mark. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have really a preventative maintenance question more than anything. I've owned three Ford vehicles, two of which have the EcoBoost engine, the 2-liter direct injected EcoBoost engine, and have had no problems with them. They've been excellent vehicles. But I try to run top quality gasoline in them, top tier gas. I change the oil every 5,000-6,000 miles. I try to do all the fluid exchanges that you're supposed to and everything else. But I have read that nowadays these turbocharged vehicles, that are so prevalent, they tend to possibly run a little bit hotter, in our desert environment. That can be a problem. Is there anything else I should be doing, to extract the longest longevity out of these engines, and maybe there's something that I need to do that
okay.
I'm not aware of.
Okay, what oil are you using?
I'm using Castrol Full Synthetic, the Titanium Edge product.
All right, I understand. I just needed Full Synthetic. Well, first of all, I think you ought to stop doing what you're doing. You're wasting
okay.
a whole lot of natural resources. It's probably you are the reason why we have an oil shortage. At 6,000 miles, you're wasting your money. You got a synthetic
okay.
oil that'll go 10 to 12,000 miles, and you're changing it at 6. Number two, the synthetic you're using turns to a tar at 500 degrees. You're not going to ever make there on the engine temperature. But what you're talking about is turbo temperature. And the turbo temperature is we know that when we throttle that little girl up and we start running fast, that the exhaust gases that are feeding the turbo are going to get up into the 700 degree range, maybe even 1,000, depending on how hard you're romping it. Well, aluminum melts at 1,100, and we don't want a turbo. We don't want an exhaust being fed into the turbo that's 1,500 degrees. You don't have to worry about that either, because your computer's not going to let you do that. So
okay.
When it gets too hot, it's not going to let you overheat the turbo. Now, The real question is what can you do to make this last a long time? Drive it like you stole it. Turbos don't like
okay.
to sit there and don't put an egg between your foot and the pedal. Let's elongate your oil changes, because you're wasting a lot of money doing that, and know that you've got the very best oil for that turbocharged motor that money can buy. Not because it's Castrol, because it's a synthetic. So I put synthetic in my diesels. I hold 14 quarts. I run 10 to 12,000 miles. And my EGTs, exhaust gas temperatures, when I'm being stupid, are 13, 1400 degrees. So I'm flirting with meltdown. But sometimes I got to make the top of the hill with a load of horses and I'm in a hurry. So I'll, and I also have a gauge and I know what my EGTs are. So I can assure you that your engine computer is not going to let you be stupid with that. But I want you just to drive it, not like your grandmother, not like you got a hot cup of coffee between your legs. I want you to exercise it on a regular basis. And if you get into turbo and you're going to get on the freeway and there's nobody in front of you, go ahead and throttle up and try to back off by the time you're at the end of the ramp. But everything you're doing is good. It's just I don't like your oil change interval. And I'll tell you, if that turbo, if you just keep your oil clean, that turbo will last you 200,000 miles. But the ones we see and replace have been abused in a variety of ways. And when they come in and they're just overheated and the color has distorted, we know somebody ran this dog too hard. So that's okay. How it works. All righty? All right. Good luck to you. Thank you very much, Mark. That was a great question. Steve, you're up next. How can I tell you? Or how can I help you?
Actually, Steve dropped, so our next caller is Bruce.
Bruce, good morning. Steve dropped, so we'll
good
take
morning.
Bruce. Go ahead, sir.
I have a 2009 Chevy Duramax. Last week, going to Payson, it showed through a code. So I stopped it in Payson and had it checked, and they told me it was a tranny code.
Okay.
And then last night, I had it checked out. And then last night, I had to brake real hard, and the code went away.
Okay.
Have any idea what would cause that?
No, none at all. None at all. You wouldn't want me to guess anyway. But keep in mind, the check engine light is yellow, and that's the same color as a yellow light. So it doesn't mean you have to stop. It doesn't mean that you're in crisis. It doesn't mean any of that. Now, you would be very unwise to chase the fact that on hard braking it went out. That's craziness. I've never chased a problem like that doing that. Once I figure out what it is, then I can explain to you why it happened. But that can't be on the front side of the diagnosis. That's on the back side of the diagnosis. So the tranny code is kind of important, but I want to tell you something. Of all the diesels in the whole wide world, that Allison underneath your Duramax, it is a diesel, yes?
Yes.
Okay. That Allison transmission is the best one out there. Without, there's nothing even second. Now, the new Dodge transmission shown up to be a pretty good transmission. It doesn't have the history, and Allison makes a 1,000, 2,000, 4,000, 8,000, and Allison does big trucks, and Allison does big motor homes, but that transmission is just a bulletproof transmission. You have to be pretty stupid to blow that thing up. But in your case, there's W.W. Williams over on the west side of town, and W.W. Williams is the manufacturer's rep. If nobody else can fix it, that's where I'd go if I were you. But what part of town are you in?
I live in Northeast Phoenix, but okay. I can travel anywhere.
Well, I'd probably take it over to... And here's the problem. There's a lot of guys that can't rebuild these transmissions and that don't want to rebuild them. There's a lot of guys that don't have any experience with these transmissions. If I were you, I'd pay attention to what happens before the light comes on, and then I'd cycle the key a couple times, pull off into the Taco Bell parking lot, turn your key on and off a couple times, see if it changes things. But if you can continue to get the light to go off, then maybe that can be a path. If I stop really, really hard, the radio crackles and the light goes out. Okay, now we have an electrical problem that probably has a soulmate with this crackle of the radio. So, but I wouldn't count on that. How many miles are on this?
142,000.
That transmission is just in second grade. So, I mean, it can go a lot longer. So I would doubt very seriously if this is going to be a giant repair. Have you done the filters and fluid like you're supposed to?
Yes.
Okay, good. Well, W.W. Williams would be my place. If we can't find it and fix it, I send my customers there because I know that they're very good at what they do.
Okay, thank you,
all
sir.
Right. You're welcome, Bruce. You're welcome. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, and we got a caller. Go ahead, Gil.
That would be Sonia.
Sonia, good morning.
Good morning. I have a 2011 Nissan Juke with 101,000 miles on it, and the brakes are squealing. So I took it in, and they did one of those complimentary, you know, checks and said it needed both front and rear brake pads, and they would change the rotors also. Well, I saw a coupon for another shop that had brake shoes and machining of the rotors for, you know, several hundred dollars less.
Okay.
So what is the pros and cons of machining versus new rotors?
Well, I wouldn't go to the first place because they've already made up their minds they're going to sell you rotors. And that's going to double the price. Their average axle, well, first of all, how much was the first bid?
The first bid was, I want to say, so like $340 and $360, something like that.
Okay. I expected that. The second bid?
There was a coupon for $179 for axle.
Okay. All right. I don't like coupons. I think it brings people in so that you can kiss them and take their money. That's what I think. But nevertheless, I'm not the king of the automotive world. Here's the answer to your question is this. The rotor has the thickness, and now we measure in thousandths of an inch, but I'm not going to do that to you. I want you to visualize this. The rotor is 1 inch thick, okay? In the back of the rotor, it says minimum thickness 3/4 of an inch. So we measure the rotors. Now, if it's 3/4 of an inch, it's 750. So we look at this and we go, well, it's not at 1 inch, but it's only at 90. So between 90 and 75, we got a lot of meat left. So I'm not going to put rotors on this car. So you can't say it needs new rotors till you measure the rotors. And if you really want to mess with them, you ask them for the old rotors back, because this is why. Oh, my dad's an old machinist, and he just wanted to check the rotors. So would you put those rotors back in my car? 50% of the time, the shop will say, oh, no, we mismeasured them. They're okay. Because the last thing they want is your dad to check them.
Yeah, but they didn't even talk about the life left on the rotors. They just said that they blanketly change the rotors when they do brake pads.
That's why I said to you I'd skip the first shop. I don't like that. If somebody did that at my shop, I'd be kind of mad. My underwear would be wadded up. So all of a sudden you're a soothsayer. All of a sudden you can look at a lady's eyes and tell her she needs four rotors. Isn't that kind of self-serving? Why don't you be the hero and bid $250 to $250 or so on each axle, which is most of us do. And then if it needs a rotor, just open the door. Okay, Mrs. Sonia, if you need rotors, but is this your first brake job?
1 minute.
Yeah.
Okay, first brake job in 100,000 miles. So it's not like you're driving the wheels off this. It's not like you're running Indianapolis 500. It's not like you're coming into traffic lights with full braking. None of that is occurring. So I'm just uncomfortable with this whole rotor thing. It's too easy to measure them and fix it. So if a good shop, and there's plenty of them out there, would say to you, Sonia, it's 300 in the front, 300 in the back. I got maybe one rotor on each side. I may not use it. But if I got to call you back, I'm going to up you another $150. But I'll give you your old rotors back. And that's it.
Okay.
So, and the minimum is marked on the rotor. It says MIN, and then it says 0.750 or whatever. All the numbers are different. So it's just written right on the rotor.
Okay.
And if he doesn't have the calipers to check it, he shouldn't be in business, because calipers is like a screwdriver. You need to have a pair. All righty?
Yeah, well, this is more of a high-end shop that I'm going to, or that I took to for that first bid. But out in the Goodyear area, do you guys have a recommended shop?
Yeah, I would go to S&S Tire and ask them how much to check your brakes, and then ask them, too, would you measure my rotors and tell me if I need new rotors, because we can do that without doing a whole lot of work.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. You're welcome, Sonia. Okay, 602-508-0960. Gil, who would be next?
The lines are open.
Oh, the lines are open. There's 5 lines available, so now's the time to jump in. We're going for a world record, 19 callers for 2 hours. So, if you want to be part of the world record, 602-508-0960. Actually 11:20, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Automatic Transmission Exchange is on my best car repair shop list. They've been around since 1968. Phil's a good guy. His transmission guys can diagnose very, very well and repair very well. So if you need a service all the way to a rebuilt and everything in between, and you're in the Phoenix area, he's on 40th Street in Washington, the north side of the road. So if you go up and down Washington on a regular basis, you know he's been there a very, very long time. Automatic transmission exchange. Okay, we just got done talking about a Duramax, and Bruce was there. So I get a text from a guy that I really respect, a transmission guy, and this is what he says. Hopefully Bruce is still listening. He says, on that Duramax, you need to check out the transfer case 2009. Chevy has a snap ring bore in the rear case that wears out, causing the output shaft to go back and forth, and then you lose the output signal, which sets the code. So the transfer case is not a transmission, but that's something that most guys can fix. It's... if you're in the North Phoenix area, Bruce, you're going to have to go to A&S Transmissions because he's the one that texted me. And I know he knows what he's doing. It may not be it, but I'd bet I'm 85% sure he has diagnosed it. I'm 85% sure. So he's way up in North Phoenix. You can also stop by and talk to Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange. But Alger's the one that did it. So if you want to use my name, you tell him that, and he just charged you double. Jerry, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I got a quick one for you. I need a definition. You say your car is coming to the end of its life when it uses oil. What's the definition of using oil?
Well, there's a couple of things, and thank you for bringing that up. It's going to start leaking oil because of internal pressure, or you're going to see blue smoke, or you're going to be adding oil on a regular basis because the oil level is below the add mark. We don't add any oil to a dipstick car until the line of oil is at the add mark or below. So blue smoke, leaking, and unusual consumption. That's usually... how many miles you got on it? What kind of car is it?
It's an ongoing thing. I've called you on it before. It was a Durango 2009.
Okay.
It's got the 4.7 motor. I clean out the PCV valve, and the oil consumption goes away almost, goes back. I'm getting up around 600-700 miles. But once the gas starts to get dirty again, and my mileage just drops off.
Okay.
Not my mileage, my consumption.
Okay, the PCV valve sucks fumes off of one side of the motor, but on the other side of the motor we have a filter that filters the air before it's sucked through the motor. Have you replaced that breather element?
Yes, I have. I looked at the hose and I felt the hose. I don't feel any problems anywhere. So
okay.
I usually just clean off the PCV valve, stick it back on, I'm good to go.
Okay. I don't know why that's the case. Are you sure you got the right one in there?
Yeah, I've checked it twice.
All right, what kind of oil are you using? Not brand, weight.
It's supposed to, it's the 520, which is what it's supposed to use.
Okay, how many miles are on it?
About 150.
Okay. Well, I think what I would do is your 520 is a synthetic, and it flows like a 5 when it's cold. It flows like a 20 when it's hot, but it doesn't go from peanut butter to water. It flows like. If I were you, at the next oil change, I'd put 30 weight in it or a 530, but I'd try a 30 weight and see what that does. Now, if the 30 weight has the same oil consumption problems, then we need to go after that PCV valve system. We got to figure out what's going on there. So I don't know what's going on there. But, and yeah, I know you've checked all the hoses and you looked at the filter and all that kind of stuff, but I just think somebody needs to take a look at that. Now, if you put the PCV valve on the driver's side valve cover and you go over to the vent and you put a piece of tissue on the top of it and the motor's idling, the tissue should not be pushing out. The tissue should be slightly sucked in. So we need a vacuum cleaner on the motor, and that's what the PCV valve is, but we need to introduce air in order to suck out air. So there's an in and an out flow. So that's what I would do.
All right. Sounds good. Thank
you. Thank you. Okay, PCV oil consumption. I'm supposed to write this down before I go to the next caller. Rich, how can I help you? Rich? Did I lose everybody?
Okay, did you just go to Rich, Mark?
I did.
They were Cracker Jack. I actually had incoming wire on that resistor that was loose, causing an excessive amperage draw, and that was what was shutting everything off. They fixed it up in an hour and a half.
Okay, now
I really appreciate your show, and I just wanted to thank you.
Okay, well, wait a minute. We missed the first part of your I don't know why I did. So tell me what kind of car it was. Did we speak before?
Yeah, we spoke before. It was back in August, and my AC had quit, my blower motor had quit, and it was just very hot.
Okay. The resistor.
And you basically said the resistor wasn't the problem because the resistor only controls three speeds. The fourth speed is uncontrolled by the resistor. But I didn't even have fourth speed.
Okay.
And what it came down to there was just over the years of this 203 Dodge Dakota, the wire must have wiggled loose, and the mechanic came out, showed me the burn spot, said, "Hey, this is what's going on. What we need to do is just rebuild this harness and put it in there," and it's been working like a champ.
Okay. All right. Did they replace the blower motor or check the amp draw on the blower motor?
Well, I had already replaced the blower motor.
Okay, fair enough. Well, they're going to see that. So, yeah. The amp, speed 1, 2, and 3 goes through a resistor, and speed 4 is just direct wired. You're right. And so what we do is we need something to tell us what happened to that harness. Well, if we got a melted harness or we got a damaged harness, then the blower motor's sucking too much amps. You already replaced it. You just didn't fix the problem that was created by the blower motor. But that's okay. That's okay. How much did they charge you to fix it?
It was about $100.
Okay.
They basically got a 6-wire
2 minutes
connector.
Uh-huh.
And they cut the wires, they repinned it, put the new resistor in, which is only $10, $15. And it's been running like a champ ever since. I just really appreciate the help.
Okay. Well, that's a good shop. They treated you fairly. The price is right for what they did. They diagnosed it, then they cut a plug off, then they re-put the plug back on, and they probably put solder on it, and they probably put some heat shrink around it. And that's a good deal for the price that you paid, $100. I would have guessed more, but then again, I wasn't there. So you ought to be happy with the 100, and I'm sure you are. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We have 5 lines open, so you're probably going to get one. So we'd like you to call if you have a question. I rarely get to settle arguments from men to women, but I can tell you that most of the time the men come to a position of stance. Otherwise, they come to this concrete place they're going to stay. And it has a whole lot more to do with what they read on the internet than oftentimes the woman has read the owner's manual. And there's oftentimes a big difference. But nevertheless, it's not going to be something that should start a war at your house. The owner's manual will always settle a dispute. Always. Just like I told my wife, I don't know when your plugs are due, look in your owner's manual. And she did, and 100. So she's sitting there at the tall 80s, and she says, "I think it'll run better." So if she's right, we'll know. Put spark plugs in it, she says, "Oh, it runs like it's brand new." Okay, fine. Or we put spark plugs in it, and she says, "Oh, it doesn't run any different." Okay, well, let's look at something else. But it's got 100,000 miles on it, it's been around the world 4 times, so maybe we're asking this elderly dog to perform at a level that age won't allow it. So nevertheless, 602-508-0960. 33 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're talking about cars here. If you'd like to join us, we have open lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is a good shop. Nate owns and operates Strictly Diesel, and they work on both foreign and domestic light diesel trucks, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak. They've been around a long time. When your car runs like a diesel, they know how to fix it. So if you got problems with your Ford not starting or your General Motors problem with respect to injectors, they've got you covered. So Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. JD, you're first. How can I help you?
Mark, it's great to be on the show. Appreciate you very much.
Thank you.
There is a Challenger, new or near new, in my future. The question is Hellcat versus Scat Pack. Oh. Pros and cons.
I'm going to pass you to somebody else who can discuss your pros and cons, because my son's performance division deals with that. I can tell you that most of the people that have the Hellcat love the Hellcat. There's always this discussion on which one's faster, which one's better. I don't know that I'd care about how fast they are, because it's not likely you're going to be able to stretch that dog out to 140 miles an hour somewhere.
It's stupid. It's okay. Stupid horsepower either way.
Right. You're right. You're right. But it's a matter of how many of them break, how expensive is it to fix. But as I understand it, there's a lot of the same in both of those. So I don't know right now, as we sit here in front, that if one's an overhead cam or if it's one's not. I don't know if we have coilover ignition, although I think we do. I think both of them have sequential fuel injection. Is there a difference as far as cubic inches is concerned? Do you know that?
Yes. The Scat Pack is the 392 Hemi.
Okay.
And the Hellcat is the supercharged 375 cubic inch.
Okay, so the first one that was the 392 Hemi doesn't have any aspiration.
It's normally aspirated.
Okay.
Yeah, normally aspirated.
I'd go with the supercharger. There'd be no question about it.
Oh. The extra 222 horsepower, ticket-grabbing horsepower, you like that, huh?
Well, no, I like the supercharger. You're not buying this Challenger because you're going to take your wife to church every day. You're buying this Challenger because it's a macho car and it's really fast. So it's nice to drive a car that you love, and you know that if you're going to throttle up and pass somebody that you won't stall when you're right next to them. But I mean, a supercharged car, here's for the rest of the people. You have a vacuum cleaner and you have a suck on one end and a push on the other. So we have exhaust and suck. You're going to take the vacuum cleaner and you're going to take the hose and you're going to stick the suck side into the exhaust side. So now, instead of just sucking air into the motor, it's like, instead of you breathing in, I'm going to take an air gun and I'm going to stick it in your lips. And when you bring in, I'm going to hit you with 80 pounds of air and I'm going to blow your lungs up. Well, that's what a supercharger is, although it's only 3 to 5 pounds of air. So I got a supercharged Camaro. I got a turbocharged Corvette. And my diesels are also obviously are turbocharged. So I like a other than normally aspirated vehicle. I feel like I'm hauling my stuff quicker, faster, better. And I'm not running up hills at 35 miles an hour with my flashers on. So,
what about maintenance on the Dodge Supercharger? Does anybody know what kind of longevity that thing has? And if it breaks, how much in the ditch are you?
Oh, you're going to be $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 if the blower comes apart. But if you change your oil on a regular basis, based on using the oil that the manufacturer said, and do pretty close to what they're doing, and if you're not stupid and you're not going to climb some long 10-mile grade with your foot to the floor, you'll be fine. You'll be fine.
So it's a solid piece of machinery either way. I basically can't go wrong. I just want one more supercar before the greeny weenies take all that stuff away from us.
Okay, don't say that. Hey, Gil, take him down before he gets me in more trouble than that just thing. I agree with you, but I got to tell you, I like Dodge. I like Dodge. I think they're really nice vehicles, and there's others I don't like, but I like Dodge. We got to move on. Jay, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. This is more of a experience question than anything else. I'm trying to put on the boot for a steering rack. It's in a recessed location, and it's virtually impossible to get a good grip on it. What have you done to ease the installation of something that you can't see and you can't get both hands on?
Well, you got to disconnect both tie rod ends, and then you just got to drop the rack. That's all.
You have to drop the rack.
Yeah, you're gonna, and then there's a good chance you're gonna have to have it aligned after you're done. How many miles are on this car?
About 130,000.
Okay. First of all, that's a dust boot. Okay, it's a dust boot. If you want to be real cowboyish, just tie a bunch of rags around that shaft and cut the old boot off if you can get to it. The only option you have is to drop the rack, and then the question is if I'm going to pay all the labor to drop the rack and do an alignment, why don't I just put another rack in it? Those are your choices. But there's no way to sneak in the boot. Besides that, you have to take the tie rod off in order to slide the boot on, and then you put the boot on, then you put the tie rod back inside. And you probably don't have the equipment necessary to pull the tie rod out of the rack.
1 minute.
All right?
I'm just
sorry.
To clarify, the rack was replaced, and this boot failed prematurely. So at this point, the tie rods are out. and we're just trying to get the boot in. And the old one came out quite easily. The new one just doesn't have the stretch to get over that lip.
On the housing of the rack.
Scary, yeah. Okay. And what's scary is you can actually see the rack mechanism, and it, all the grease is exposed. So I'd be a little uncomfortable driving without the protection of the boot.
There's no seal there?
The boot is sealed. So the boot is on there so securely, and then it, of course, has a metal...
I understand that, but when you have the boot off, you can actually see the rack inside?
Yes.
Okay, because
yeah,
normally
this
that...
is a Ford.
Okay. I don't... I'm giving you... If you can't get it off, the only choice you got is to take the rack off. That's all there is to it. I can't tell you how to get the boot on there if you can't already get the boot on there. And it sounds like your technical level is a tad higher than the normal person. So if you've already taken the tie rod ends out and you're sitting there trying to boot the boot on and you can't get to the inside, you can't stretch the boot, you can't get to the clamp on the inside, then you only have to take, you have to take the wrap off, the rack off, that or drop that side. But I don't think you can drop that side. So if you already got the tie rods in, then you got two rack mounts and you got to disconnect the steering wheel from the rack. Those are the things that you have to do. Got to move on, but good luck to you, JD. Good luck to you. Jay, you're up next.
Oh, that was Jake.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I screwed that up. Christine, you stay right there. I'm going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to take you first. Welcome back, everybody. 43 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Let me tell you about a shop in town that has a technician that the rest of us don't. Jeremy at Larry Harker's Auto has taken tests, every single test. The diesel, the paint and body, the mechanical, the transmission. He is a wide-range technician that has no peer as far as I know. So if you need something diagnosed and you can't find it anywhere else, then Larry Harker's at 38th Avenue in Indian School is a place to go. Bob and Ellen own it, and Jeremy is a relative of theirs, and they've been in business since 1967. But I'm impressed because he's the first one I've met that has passed all of the ASC certifications. That's pretty impressive. Okay, we're going to go to the phones real quick, and we're going to start with Christine. Christine, how can I help you?
Hi, yes. This may not seem like it very important to you, but we have an issue in our car with these tiny little bugs that have gotten into it, and they bite. We know what they are. They're called no-see-ums or sandflies, midges. And we had a pest control company come out, and they sprayed three times, and they didn't go away. And then I saw them coming out like at this front window defrost.
Uh-huh.
They're so tiny you can barely see them, but they're like babies are coming up out of that.
I understand.
And,
I understand.
Okay.
I know what no-see-ums are. They call them in Texas, they call them chiggers, and they bite you, and they make a big pimple and stuff like that. But in your particular case, are you running your air conditioning on recirculatory, or are you running it on regular?
I'm running it where it comes from outside, you mean, where it comes from outside?
Yeah.
Yeah, I put it on running from outside.
Okay. Well, that's...
I figured that would help, but...
No, it's not. We think that you might be sucking it through the vent from outside. So if you go to recirculation or maximum, we're going to circulate the air in the car only. So we're going to suck it, make it cold, and push it back out at you. We're not going to take outside air, make it cold, and push it out at you. So I would go into recirculator mode, which it's not going to get rid of the bugs immediately, but you could put some flypaper in there around the vents that you're getting these bugs coming out. And, of course, they come out and they're going to stick to the flypaper. You're going to have to explain it to all the people that go to work with you. But at the same token, this is the first time I've ever had this question answered. But I think we need to shut down the outside air coming in, because there's only way they're going to come in is from the outside air. So,
they've been in there for a long time, and they're not coming from the outside. They came from the front of where we live. They're in the rocks. There was some water pool there, and that's originally where they came, and they got on our dog.
Okay.
And he brought them in.
Okay, stop. They are coming from the outside, and they come from the outside because when you start your car up, they're probably around the windshield area at the bottom, which is where we suck air into the car. So if you park your car and the windows are up, then those CMs really aren't going to care. But if it, I don't want to argue with you. You ask me my advice is, and that's going to recirculatory on your air conditioning and stop using outside air. And I think you won't blow them in. So wherever they're camped out, they're going to stay outside. They're not going to be blowing into your car. If you're taking outside air and running it in, you're bringing them in. But I got to run. Jerry, you're next. How can I help you?
Yes, Mark. Thank you for taking my call. I've been listening to you as a woman. I'm interested in mechanics. However, I have some questions for you.
Okay.
I have a 2000 Buick Century. It's got 143,000 miles on it. And the power windows, both back windows, do not want to go up when I push the power button. How much would it cost me to get that fixed?
Well, it depends on what it is. Are you doing it off near the door switch, or are you using the switches back at the windows?
Door switch in the front of driver's side.
Okay. I want you to try it from the switches in the back.
Oh, okay.
Because the master switch gets the most work. And it can go bad, and it can take out its ability to open and close those back windows. But if you get in there, and the back windows don't work with the master switch, and then you go to the driver's door, and it goes up and down on the passenger side, up and down, then you got a bad master switch. And that's going to probably cost you, I'm going to guess, between $200 and $300.
Okay. All right. And the next question I have, Mark, is when I start my car, this has been going on for a while, especially in the morning, I guess when it's sitting for a long time, I smell a strong smell, a burning rich of gas, I guess. And then sometimes I smell a real smell of gas, very rarely on that one, but the strong smell, burning rich, happens often when I start it up.
Okay.
When it's been sitting.
I noticed you used the word rich, and that's a tailpipe smell. But,
I don't know.
Okay,
yeah, okay.
But when you talk about rich, it's a tailpipe smoke. I think what I would do if I was your technician is I would say I want you to leave it overnight.
Okay.
And then I want to open the hood in the morning, and I want to look to see if you have a fuel leak somewhere, a small fuel leak. And if you have a small fuel leak, I'm going to fix that, and we're going to stop blowing it into the car. But as far as the tailpipe is concerned, when you start it up in the morning, it can run rich. It's a different kind of smell than raw gasoline. But
it is.
Yeah, us old guys can figure that out. But I think it's more likely than not that you have a small fuel leak underneath the hood. I believe that.
Okay, but I don't have any fuel leak in my garage when it sits for a long time.
But it doesn't make any difference.
Oh, okay,
there's
great.
There's lots of places that we can have a fuel leak that the fuel puddles within the engine itself.
Oh,
so,
I see. I get it.
So that's what I would have done. And then the next thing they're going to do is replace the PCV valve, make sure the vent's good. Then the next thing they're going to do is they're going to probably say to you, I want you to go on recirculatory on your air climate control system, and I want you to start it up and tell me, do you still smell it or don't you smell it? So is it underneath the hood or is it not underneath the hood? Is it on the ground? But you're not seeing anything on the ground. So I still think, I don't know if my wife could tell the difference between raw fuel and a rich tailpipe, but I could. So I'm just saying if you leave it overnight, let them have a chance to smell it. Okay?
Yeah, and one more question. You know, this is an old car, and I'm a senior citizen. I'm 80 years old, and I don't want to spend the money on another car. So if I decided to do that, a turbo engine, is that good for me to buy?
Yeah, if you're the kind of lady that drives around and never spills a hot coffee that's set between your legs, you don't need a turbo. And a turbo will just interrupt your whole lifestyle. But if you're the typical little old lady from Pasadena and every once in a while you want to throttle it to the floor and you want your giddy up to get to a run, then a turbocharger will make you happy.
Okay, well, I'm not interested in that. I don't drive much.
Okay, so I would just get with what got you there, a four-cylinder fuel-injected motor. You'd be real happy with it.
Okay, thank you very much.
You betcha, ma'am. Medina, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
We have a 2005 Mercury Mariner. I bought it about 8 years ago, and then, you know, my son's been driving it since he's old enough to drive. So when I first got it, it was parked out front, and the alarm would go off, and I'd go out and turn it off, and then, you know, it happened every now and again. So then I noticed the car was saying that the rear left passenger door was open, even though it wasn't.
Okay.
And so I kind of dealt with that, and it would drain the battery. And so anyway, it's been sitting out front for about a week. My son can't drive right now with his hand. And so the battery died, and I figured that was the issue. But so we had it jumped, drove it over to get a new battery, and it was saying now it's the right passenger door. So I was just wondering, do you know a place that I can take it to, like, actually have that diagnosed? The dealership has kept it for a couple of days, and they keep saying they can't figure out what's
okay.
wrong with it.
If the problem's not there when you're looking, then you can't possibly fix it. So
right.
And I wouldn't tell the story that you just told, because
okay.
your story's a little confusing. And if we have a signal that says the right rear door's is open, the reason why is because the door switch is lying. So,
right.
And that door switch is kind of inexpensive. So I think that if I were the shop, I would just replace the two back door switches with your permission, and you would know that I'm guessing with your money.
Okay.
So I think the door switches. Now, here's something else. Do you know how you take blue paint tape? And if you put one down and then you put another on top of it, another on top of it, another on top of it, you know how you're making like a big Band-Aid?
Uh-huh.
Find out where the door switch is on the car and where it touches the door. And then put, I don't know, 10 layers of that blue tape on the inside of the door where the door switch hits. And when you shut the door, we're pushing the door switch in a little further. See what happens.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
Good luck
to
you, Medina.
Thank you.
You betcha. Door switch. See, I have to write it down because sometimes people call and say, I want to talk to you more about that. Pete, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, gentlemen. I got a 2001 Jeep Cherokee. Bought it with 76,000 miles on it. Drove it for a couple thousand miles, and I noticed that the rear brakes were sticking at the stoplights. It would just stick momentarily and then release, getting kind of aggravating. So I took it to my garage and took the back wheels off. Brake cleaned the entire system. The pads looked fine to me. One thing I did notice, though, which I never encountered before, it was the type of shoes where it had a stripe down the middle, and like it wasn't making contact with the inside of the drum.
Okay.
Never seen that before. The shop that I eventually took it to, he told me it was for cooling purposes.
Okay.
So anyways, it was a very symmetrical strip down, so it wasn't something, a defect in the drum itself. So it was like it was supposed to be.
I understand. I don't understand how you can decide that the brakes are sticking. Because I think you changed the question around, and you say to Mark, how many times have you ever fixed a brake sticking on the back end? I would say...
Well, I'm getting to this.
All right, let's get to it then.
So I can feel it almost every time I release the brakes.
That doesn't make any difference to me. That doesn't make any... Listen, if your brakes were hanging up, why haven't you smoked the shoes off of them? Think about that.
Well, see, the real reason for the phone call is what the mechanic told me. So I thought I would bring it in. I didn't want to spend a Saturday afternoon on my butt in my garage doing my shoes. I remember what my father used to do and all that, and it was just aggravating. So I took it to a local chain shop, expecting to get a nice $150.
Let's get to the end of the story.
Okay.
I mean,
he tried to sell me a new brake booster.
Okay.
So I put a new brake booster hook valve in, and it seems to be working a little bit better, but they still grab a little bit at the stoplight.
Okay, well, U-joints cause the same problem. So do rear bushings in the differential. That causes the same problem. You're describing a problem that can be caused by a lot. What you're doing is going around and telling everybody your diagnosis, and then you're taking their guess. I suggest you just have somebody diagnose it. There's no way in God's green earth that those brakes are hanging up and you haven't smoked the rear brakes off that car. I don't care. So if you took the drums off that and the brake shoes were melted, if the brake shoes show and the drums are blue, that would be, okay, I'm wrong, you're right. But I'm not capable of driving a vehicle and letting go of the brake. Besides that, the idle could be up high, and as soon as you take your foot off the brake and you hit the gas, there's this clunk movement that you've got because the idle's 400 RPMs too tall. So I can't fix your car over the air, but I think what you need to do is take it to somebody and demonstrate the problem and have them diagnosis, because everybody's been working off of your diagnosis, and I think the evidence shows that you're wrong. I don't care about the stripe on the brake shoes, whether it's going to be for cooling or whether it's going to be when you wear the stripe out, that's when the shoes need to be replaced. I don't care about that. That has nothing to do with anything. If I saw the stripe or if I didn't see the stripe, I wouldn't care. Anyway, and we got Lance. Lance, I can help you. We need to be that kind of quick, though. We got 3.5 minutes.
A quick question. I have a 99 Dodge with a 5.9 liter diesel in it.
Yes.
I had it scoped, and they told me that there was starting to have a problem with a fuel injector. And what came out of it was originally they suggested a particular one, and then later that they suggested doing all of them. I believe you've discussed this earlier or another, on another occasion. And I wanted to kind of enlighten me a little bit as what the difference is.
I need to know about the symptoms. Does it idle rough? Does it run rough? Can you tell that there's a cylinder that's not participating?
Yes.
Okay. All right. You can do either one. You can go after one or you can go after all six. Let me switch the question around. Hey, Mark, do you work on diesels? Yep. Do you do them, you do injectors one at a time? Yep. Why don't you do them all at the same time? Well, that benefits me and not him. How many miles are on your 99, Lance?
About 300,000.
Okay. So have you owned it since it was new?
Yes.
Okay. So this is the first time you've had an injector?
Yes.
Okay. So you've been around the world 12 times, and they're going to say to you, well, you got 300,000 miles, let's do them all. And you find out the price. Or you can just do the one that you have the problem with. It's your call. I'm telling you, if it were me, I'd put the one in. Now, 300,000 miles, I'd just put the one in. That's what I'd do. But you can put in all of them, but before you do that, I'd probably stop at a couple of other shops and ask them to bid all six of them. What part of town do you live in?
I live in Northwest Phoenix.
Okay. I'd probably either take it to Larry Harker's on the west side, or I would take it to Strictly Diesel up at I-17 at Pinnacle Peak. I'd probably have one of those two guys look at it. If it's got a miss in it and you can hear it and you can feel it, then the injector's a good thing. However, it could be something else that's causing the problem. We can have a valve dancing around in a seat and stuff like that. So if it's missing from the minute you start it to the minute you shut it off every day, an injector could be that. But does it get better the faster you go? If it gets better the faster you go, then maybe it is a mechanical issue and an injector is not it. So that's the real question. The question is, we've got a misfire in the cylinder. Are we sure it's the injector and maybe not a mechanical issue? Mark at MarkSalem.com, Mark at MarkSalem.com, if you want to continue the conversation.